Okay, so this week is Parshat Chukat. So, how many people die in Parshat Chukat? Chukat is about death. Zot Chukat HaTorah. Chukat HaTorah is the Paraduma. Paraduma deals with death. And on a general level, that's one of the things, that one of the observations that we had for a while, and that is that in Sefer Bamidbar, which is a book of primary, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, it's a book primarily of narrative. Whenever there's law, you have to ask yourself, so what is this law doing in this particular place? Why do we have a law now? So if we have the law of Paraduman, Parama deals with death, so then we have to ask ourselves, okay, so why is this mentioned at this particular point? Why death? So last week a lot of people died. Last week we have Korach and Datan and Aviram. On got saved. Why did On get saved? Because the people are holy. The people, they didn't mind rebelling against Moshe, but they wouldn't look chas v'shalom at a woman's hair uncovered. So that's that itself is very, very interesting. So On doesn't die, but Korach dies, but Korach's children don't die. But Datan Aviram, it sounds like everything they have. And then the 250 men and then another, 14,000 people die afterwards. So you have a lot of deaths. So because you have a lot of deaths, so then it makes sense to have the Para Aduma, correct? Correct, except for one thing. I'm saying that all makes sense, but there's a bigger problem. If you noticed it or if you didn't notice it, very, very quietly, sometime between last week and the end of this week, if you want, we can look exactly when it is, but at some point, the whole generation has passed on. Which means suddenly we're no longer in the second year. Suddenly we're in the 40th year. With the end of the 40th year. When Miriam dies at the end of the 40th year. Aaron dies, it's already, Rosh Chodesh Av, at the end of the 40th year. So Moshe's going to die as well, so that's going to be dragged out a little bit more, but we're already in the 40th year. If we're in the 40th year, that means that this whole generation that has left Egypt has very slowly disappeared. There is this terrible midrash, I mean it's a wonderful midrash, but it's a terrible midrash, which is found in Eicha Rabbah, which tells that how on every year on Tisha B'Av, anticipating Tisha B'Av, they would all dig a grave, and they would all get into a grave on Tisha B'Av, and then every year certain people would stay in the grave, the others would get out. So that's how they would know who would die that year. They would all apparently would die only on Tisha B'Av, Yom L'Shana, B'Chiyah L'Dorot. So specifically on Tisha B'Av they would die, and that's what it sounds like from the Midrash. Again, I can't guarantee you. That's what it sounds like, that specifically then they would all get into the grave, and then only some would get out, and some would stay in the grave. That's why I said it's a terrible Midrash, because it's a nice Midrash, but it gives a terrible image, a terrible scene of people dying after year after year after year, dying. So then presumably, according to that Midrash, every year people die, or if you want to say that towards the end people die. What? Right. And the Midrash really comes to explain Tu B'Av. So it says, what happened on Tu B'Av, that on that year, the certain people, nobody died, sorry. On that year, nobody died. So then they went in, maybe they made a mistake. They went in on the next night, and nobody died. The next night, nobody died. The next night, nobody died. So finally, they got to Tu B'Av, and they see a full moon, they say, batla ha'gzera. I mean, that whole midrash is there to explain Tu B'Av, why Tu B'Av is a happy day. So it's the day that they stopped dying in the Midbar. That's the way that this midrash comes to explain it. So either way, so sometime between last week, where 14, almost 15,000 people die, and who can do math? I think it'll come out to the same number also. What's 600,000 divided by 40? It's also 15. It's also, can, 600,000 divided by 40 years. It's also 15. So the 15,000 people that died last week, that's the year's average. Every year, 15,000 people are going to die in order to fill out to get to the 600,000 to die. I'm just saying more. The 600,000 she'atzumi Mitzrayim. Can? Except for. Pova Sham of Sharla, but 600,000 is without Levium. Levium is not included in the number. Yeah. No. But anyway, I'm just saying this in a general term, so it's interesting. So every year 15,000 die. So why do we need the law of Para Aduma? So on the one hand I say I needed it for last week for those who died. On the other hand, I need it for between last week and this week, we have lots and lots of people dying. Although, as I said, this scene of them digging their graves and getting in, that we're spared. We don't see that, but we just know that a lot of people are missing between then and between now. Okay, so that's the first thing. The other thing is that when we talk about who died, so then what we have is that two other people dying this week. One person who dies is, as we said, Miriam, and the other one who dies is Aharon. The third one doesn't die, but he gets a death sentence, and that's Moshe. So Parshat Chukat is a parsha where death is, I would say, it's one of the themes, and it should be in our minds. Although the thing that I want to focus on specifically today is something which I get the sense that the commentaries are really not happy with. One of the reasons I say not happy with, because it is so difficult, and that is the death sentence. This is when Moshe and Aaron are going to learn that they're not continuing on. And the commentaries have a very hard time trying to put their finger on to identify what sin it is that they were guilty of. I mean, exactly what is it that Moshe and Aaron did in order to get this punishment? And for that matter, even if you figure out what it is that Moshe did, then you're still left with the question, what exactly did Aaron do? Because they both apparently did something, and therefore they're both going to be punished. So let's take a look at this first source, Perikav, Pasuk Aleph. Vayivol b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edam mibartzin b'chodesh harishon. So now this chodesh harishon is chodesh harishon shel shanat ha'arba'im, for the 40th year. Vayeshev ha'am b'kadesh v'tamat sham Miriam v'tikaber sham. Miriam dies and is buried. And Miriam's death, let's note, there's no reason given, there's no sin committed. So why did Miriam die? Why did Miriam die? Is that even a good question? Why did Miriam die? Why did Miriam die? Because she was an old woman and she died. I'm saying, is that such a disturbing thing that she died? Nobody really asks that question. Why did Miriam die? What happened to Miriam? Why doesn't Miriam continue? So Miriam dies. What's more, what they pay attention much more to is the idea of water.
Wait, she died on the 40th?
Yeah.
Look.
I said, I don't know. Below hayamayim la'ida, so that's what is far more disturbing about her death. Oh no, the fact that she dies doesn't bother anybody. I'm saying that a little facetiously, but the fact that she died is not the question. Miriam dies, but then there's a problem that there's no water. This is what leads Chazal to say, why did we have water in the desert? The reason we had water was b'schut Miriam, and this is the whole idea of the Be'er Miriam, is because that when she dies, then the water stops. And remember that one of the great deeds of Miriam, there's two great deeds that she does, and they're both connected with water, at least in the Pshat and the Torah. One great deed that she does is that she goes down and follows Moshe when he's in the water, and she causes Moshe to be taken from the water and for Moshe to be saved. So you can say, b'schut zeh, she ends up getting the whole of Be'er Miriam. The other thing is that after she sees the Kriyat Hayam, which is also all the people being saved in the water. So what you have is the Goel, Moshe, being saved by the water, and then you have the Geula, when all of Am Yisrael, so you have the, what I would call the Avtipus, so you can have the micro, the macro, but you have a very similar thing, and then you hear Miriam, or at least the men didn't hear Miriam singing and so on. And I saw in the commentary of a Philo from Alexandria, he said, why did Miriam have to sing? So he says that you need, in an orchestra, in a whole choir, you need sopranos as well. It doesn't work well. So I have a feeling that not very many people have adopted that interpretation, that a choir doesn't sound well if they're all deeper voices. You need other sounds as well. But as I said, that's not exactly the normative approach, but Miriam does sing by the splitting of the sea, and that's the other thing. So, but it is interesting that water is there in the background by both of those episodes. V'lo hayamayim la'eda v'yikalu al Moshe v'al Aharon v'yarev ha'am im Moshe. So they gather v'yikalu. What is it? Vayakalu. It sounds almost like a protest. They come and they're protesting. They protest against Moshe and Aaron. But they quarrel, Vayarev, they quarrel Ha'am im Moshe. Had we only died in front of God like our brothers. Why do you take us out to die, us and our livestock? Why do you take us out of Egypt to take this place? Why do you take us to this place without anything's growing and there's no water to drink? And as we listen to this, we get the sense that we've heard these kinds of complaints again and again and again. And we also, by the way, get the sense that Moshe has heard these complaints again and again and again. And Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron b'nei HaKalel petach ha'amod v'yiplu al p'neihem. So this is again a time that Moshe falls down and they pray and they fall down. It's interesting to track the various times Moshe nafal, that Moshe, is it out of prayer? Is it something else? Is it exhaustion? What exactly is the desperation? What exactly is this gesture that Moshe does? Something that I'm not really going to answer today, but Moshe goes through this. Vayera kavod Hashem aleihem, and God appears to him. By the way, how many of these things just sound familiar? We've seen this deja vu. We've heard all of this so many times before, which is the thing which really disturbs us about this whole episode. Is not so much that they're complaining. We're used to their complaining. That's what they do. They complain. I told you I'm going to Chutzlaritz, and a couple of my kids are coming with me and my wife. So I told my wife yesterday she should tell them they can only complain once a day, only once a day maximum, and hopefully and preferably when I'm not there. Try to limit how many times. You can complain; it's fine. But just try to limit it. I'm saying, we're so used to this. We're so used to the complaining. That's not what disturbs us. The thing which we find shocking about this entire episode is the conclusion, which means to say that the people should perhaps get some kind of punishment. That we'd almost be expecting. We're used to that. Some kind of miracle takes place that we're used to. But the way that this episode ends up, that's completely unpredictable, which means if we got to this point in the Chumash and none of us knew what happens next, and I asked you, okay, now write how this story ends, absolutely none of you would have predicted this ending, because, as I said, it's completely unpredictable based upon all the previous occurrences. And by the way, that's the difficulty that the commentaries really have. Okay. Vaydeber Hashem Moshe Lemor, God says to Moshe, Kach et ha-mateh v'hakel et ha-eda, ata v'aron achicha, go and gather everybody, you and Aaron, v'dibaretem el ha-sel el-einehem, and speak to the rock in front of them, in front of their eyes, v'natan me'mav, it will yield, it will give its water, v'otzeit l'mayim min ha-sel, take water out from the rock, v'yishkit et eda v'et b'iram, and you should give them water, them and their flocks. V'kach Moshe et ha-mateh, Moshe takes the staff, milifnei Hashem, kasher tzivau, he takes it out as he was commanded. V'kalu Moshe v'aron el kahal el p'nei ha-sel, and they gather the people in front of the rock, v'yomer lahem, and Moshe says, Shemuna ha-morim, listen here, you rebellious people, ha-min ha-sel zanotzi l'chamayim, from this rock will we draw out water, v'yorem Moshe et yado, Moshe lifted his hand, v'yach et ha-sel b'mateo pamayim, and he hit the rock with the staff twice. How do you say staff, by the way, in Aramaic? Chutra. You should know this from the Chad Gadya. Chutra. The chutra is the mate. So he hits it with the mate twice. V'yetzu mayim rabim v'tesh te'da'u v'yiram. And people drink a lot of water, they and their flock. And again, as of this point, there really is nothing unusual, nothing that really should disturb us. What disturbs us is next. V'yom Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron. God says to Moshe and Aaron, Ya'an lo himantem bi lakdisheni l'nei b'nei Yisrael, because you didn't believe in me to sanctify me in front of the eyes of the children of Israel. L'chein lo teviot akal hazeh la'aret shenatati lahem. Therefore, you will not lead the people into the land which I'm giving them. Himamei meriva. This is the water of struggle. Asher ravu b'nei Yisrael et Hashem, where the people quarreled with God, v'kadesh b'am, and they were sanctified there. This decree is so strange. And essentially the commentaries, and by the way, I purposely did not give you any commentaries today. I don't know if you noticed this. I purposely only gave you psukim. There are no commentaries here. The commentaries just go in all kinds of different directions to try to figure out what exactly it is that what went wrong, what was the sin, and therefore, why did they deserve this punishment?
It clearly, it seems like it has nothing to do
Okay, good. So there's two problems. One is, what did Moshe do wrong? And the second is, what did Aaron do? And did they do the...
It seems like they did the same thing.
And did they do the same thing?
Aaron didn't do an action.
So therefore... Yeah. Right. So what exactly happened over here? As I said, the commentaries have a difficult time with this. There are those who will say that the sin over here, and this is the obvious answer that everybody grew up with, that, yes, which is what? That he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. God said to speak. And by the way, the problem over here is what I would call, I don't know how you say it in Hebrew, but this is what I would call the problem of Simon Says. You have this in Hebrew? Herzl or Mel? Okay, so that's the problem Simon Says. Why is the problem Simon Says? Because God said, take the stick, and every time he said, take the stick, or not even every time, let's make it easier. The same scene took place previously. Where did it take place? No, the one which is closest is not by Kriyat Yam Suf. It's in source number 5, Perek Yud Zayin in Shemot. Notice how similar it is. Vayesu kol adap bnei Yisrael. By the way, is that already similar?
Yeah.
It's already similar. Vayesu kol adap bnei Yisrael min asin l'maaseim al pi Hashem v'yachanu b'refidim v'ein mayim l'shto ta'am v'yarev ha'am im Moshe. Right? Again, linguistically. Yes, it's similar. V'yarev ha'am im Moshe. Why do you take us out of Egypt to kill us over here, us and our flock? What am I going to do? Soon they're going to stone me. By the way, how much of Moshe's life deals with water and how much of Moshe's life deals with rocks? Right. Water and rocks completely follow Moshe in numerous scenes, numerous episodes. It's also very interesting that Rabbi Akiva.
Why rocks?
He stands behind the rock, and there God reveals Himself. He goes up and he brings down the luchot. I can go more, but it is interesting that Rabbi Akiva, who, I'm not going to justify this, I won't back this up, I won't support this, but Rabbi Akiva, who is somehow connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's also he sees the water coming out of the rock, and that's when he starts his career. And there's a lot more to talk about. Yeah, there's a lot more to talk about that. Take the mateh, and you'll hit it. Moshe did this. This place is called Masa Umiriva. The other place is called Mei Miriva. I mean, how similar are these scenes? The answer, extremely similar. Are they identical? They're not identical. Is right before the pasuk, right. And
so how come they didn't have water?
Maybe apparently didn't start yet.
So after that scene,
right. So, I'm going to say it again. These two episodes are incredibly similar. If you're Moshe, and the last time God says, take the staff that you hit the Ya'ara with, that you hit the river with, and hit the rock, and now he says, kachat makeh, right? Take the staff, right? Go and speak to it. So I'm saying, the fact that Moshe hit this, if this is the entire sin, I'm going to say it again. It sounds to me very much as a problem of Simon Says, that Moshe didn't listen exactly. Now, of course, you can justify it and say, excuse me, when God speaks, then you have to listen, you know, exactly, and you make one mistake, and that's catastrophic. But after every single thing I'm going to say, there seems to be a technical failure and not a moral failure with that. Which means to say, the response of God just doesn't fit very well with this. What's God's response? Shelo himantem bi lahakdisheni, you didn't believe in me to sanctify, which means, yeah, I'm saying it could be, it just, that sounds so dramatic, and the response is so dramatic, and if the whole problem is God said, take the rock and take the staff, and last time he hit, right, and now take it, but don't hit it, so it just seems extreme. So I'm going to repeat myself and say, yes, I'm sure people can give a whole drasha on how when God speaks, you have to do it exactly, and not to do it exactly, there's this huge problem, and so on and so forth. But to call this a sin because Moshe assumed that he should behave now like he behaved last time God told him to do this, for me at least, there's something which is missing, and it could be that you can give me an answer. I just happen to like the question more than the answer. Yes? You're with me on that? Another approach that we find is those who say, no, the problem was not the whole problem was not even what he said or what he did. The problem was that Moshe was angry. Moshe got angry. By the way, does it say he got angry? It doesn't say he got angry, but just by the way that he responds is anger, and one now can go and give a whole speech on why anger is bad, and that's how this is used then, how anger is so bad, especially if you're a leader, you're not supposed to get mad with the people, and so on and so forth. Although, let's be honest. Yeah, let's be honest that Moshe can get angry or disappointed at these people, so that should not be the most telling thing. And of course, with all the answers we give, we still have the problem with what about our own? I mean, that just hovers about the whole time. So Moshe hit the... Okay, there are those who say, what was the problem? It wasn't even that he hit it. What was the problem? Do you notice it? It says that he hit it twice. So some of the first should say, that was the problem. You only should have hit it once, and the fact that he hit it twice, that was the problem. Okay, but what... And how is the punishment commensurate to the crime? So I'm saying, you can start looking at all of the commentaries over here, which I'll say again, I deliberately did not bring, and you're going to find explanation after explanation after explanation for all the terrible things that Moshe did. If you want, you can look in, if you don't want to work so hard, you can look in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and he gives a whole bunch of explanations over here. I see here 1, 2, 3, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hei, Vav, at least 10 different answers he offers over here as to what it was that was wrong with Moshe's action. So instead of working hard, you can just look on the Or HaChaim and you can look at a whole list of them. There is another approach, by the way, that this whole thing is a cover-up. There's a cover-up. That Moshe and Aaron die having nothing to do with this. By the way, if it is a cover-up, then God is in on it, which itself should make us a little uncomfortable. The reason, and again, I'm purposely not giving you names and so on right now, but the approach to say that it's a cover-up is more based upon other places where their deaths are mentioned and context that it's brought up. For example, in Sefer Devarim, look at source number 9. This is in Sefer Devarim, where Moshe is repeating the whole story of the spies, of the Meraglim. And in the middle of telling the whole story, he says, that's why you're punished, and that's why you're not going in, and that's why Kalev is going in. Now, the next pasuk, which I'm going to skip now for a second, the pasuk afterwards says, and Yoshua is going to go in, and he's going to take my place. In Pasuk Lamed Zayin says, Gam bihitanaf Hashem biglalchem. And God got upset at me because of you. Leimor gam atah lo tavo shama. You're also not going to go in. Now hold it a second. As Moshe's telling the story over here, it seems a little bit confused. He's blaming Am Yisrael for his not going in. And it's out of character. And let's just ask it differently. What in the world is he talking about? What's he talking about? First, I'll say, God, because of you, so yes. So some commentaries here are going to say, yeah, because you guys got right? Because you guys went crazy and pushed me and pushed me and pushed me and pushed me. So finally I hit the rock. Now that's not an easy interpretation over here. As I said, there are those who want to claim the real reason that Moshe dies is nothing to do with hitting the rock. The real reason that Moshe dies is because Moshe was involved in sending the spies. Now that's not an easy it's not an easy thing to say. And for that matter, once I'm going to go in that direction, what would be the real reason that Aaron dies? What was the Chetegel? But by the way, the reason why this is interesting, I think there's at least one person in the Chumash who believed this, and that person was Korach. I think when Korach takes a look and he says, you know, everybody's holy except for who? Everybody's holy except for Moshe and Aaron. Because, you know, Shevet Levi doesn't sin, right? Korach is from Levi. Again, when go back to last week a little bit, I said this in a different shiur last week. Those of you who stayed afterwards, I didn't say it. I said this a little bit. I felt sick last week. I don't know what I said, but good. I felt terrible. But if you look at all of Shevet Levi did not sin with the Chet HaEgel. It did not sin with the Chet HaMeraglim. One Levi sinned with the Chet HaEgel, and who was that? That was Aaron, who's the one who's involved in making it. One Levi sinned with the Chet HaMeraglim, that was Moshe, who sent them. So when Korach is coming from as a Levi, everybody's holy as far as he's concerned, except for Moshe and Aaron, which means as far as he's concerned, by the way, it's almost a shame that Korach didn't get to live to see this, because he would have said, ah, I told you, amarti, yadati. But to therefore claim that Moshe and Aaron's death is connected to the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim, the reason why one would go in this direction is very simple. Because in Parshat Chukat, by hitting the rock, there's nothing to blame Aaron, and Moshe didn't seem to do anything which was so bad, especially when you look at other episodes. So as I said, it's part of the cover-up. You don't like that so much, do you? There's another reason not to like it. Yeah, there's a second time that Moshe talks about his death. In source 10, in Parshat Ve'etchanan, Ve'etchanan el Hashem Be'etahi le'mor, Hashem Elokim ata achilot elarota et avdecha et gadolcha v'itetcha chazaka shemikel b'shamayim v'artza sheyaseh kamaseh gvuratecha ebranna ve'eret ha'aretz ha'tova asher be'ever yadein ahara tova zeh levanan. Moshe again says, you know, I plead with you, please, let me go and see the land of Israel. Ve'itaber Hashem bi lima'anchem, but God was upset with me, lima'anchem, for your sake. Again, ma kesher v'lo shemai lai v'yom Hashem elai rav lachal tosif taber elai od b'dvar hazeh. So what does this mean? Lima anchem. So if we hear, there's another midrash that we can connect it to, but it's not easy. It says Mizmor la'asaf, and this is also midrash in Echa. The midrash says Mizmor la'asaf, it should say kina la'asaf. What's the kina? It goes in and it describes the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So according to this midrash in Echa, it says that actually the destruction of the Mikdash was an act of chesed on God's part. You say, how in the world can that be an act of chesed? And the answer is because the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and Am Yisrael were not destroyed. So there is an approach. I heard this from Rabbi Soloveitchik. I'm sure there are others who say this as well. There is an approach to say as follows. Had Moshe gone into Eretz Yisrael, then the Beit HaMikdash never would have been destroyed. Which means, think of it differently for a moment. How long did it take between the time they got to Eretz Yisrael and they built the Mikdash? It took over 400 years. If Moshe goes into Eretz Yisrael, it happens immediately. Everything is immediate. So there's this whole approach in Midrash that if Moshe enters Eretz Yisrael, Moshe becomes the Melech HaMashiach, Moshe builds the Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaMikdash is never destroyed, and so on. So that's where this Gemara, it's a Midrash and a Gemara, by the way, that says, hold it, Mizmor La'asaf? It should be a Kina. It says, no, it's a Mizmor. Why is it a Mizmor? Because Otzi et Chamato al Eitz Va'aven, that God let out his anger on stuff, on rocks, on wood, on rocks, and so on, right? Mashu Domeim. Instead of taking out his anger on Am Yisrael. So therefore, it could be as well over here that at this point, it's not just that Am Yisrael has sinned and sinned again and again and again. It means that Am Yisrael is going to continue to sin as we move on in history. And over here, the question is, will God take it out on Am Yisrael, or will he take it out on a building? So over here, that's how some want to read this in. But again, it's interesting that Moshe has two opportunities to talk about his death and inability to go in, and lima anchem, for your sake, or biglalchem, because of you. And it is very strange. On the other hand, look at source 11. Source 11 is very good because it's God speaking. And not only is God speaking, God is speaking again about Moshe's death. Ve'deber Hashem Moshe be'etzem ha'yom hazeh le'mor. Where is this? This is Perek Lamed Bet. Where is Perek Lamed Bet? This is the end. This is the end of, you know, there's not so much room left in the Torah at this point. V'deber Hashem Moshe be'etzem ha'yom hazeh le'mor. It could be the very day that Moshe dies. Alei el har Avrim hazeh har Nevo asher be'eretz Moab asher p'nei Yerecho v'rei eretz Kanan asher ani noten b'nei Yisrael v'achuzah. So in Ve'et Kanan, he speaks about it. Over here, it actually is going to happen. Umut bahar asher ata ola shama, and you're going to die by this mountain. Ve'yisef alamecha kasher meit Aaron achicha bahar har ve'yasaf alamav. You're going to die like he did. By the way, now it connects the deaths of the two of them together. Al asher ma'altem bi. You are guilty of, what word does God use here? Mi'ila. Right. Mi'ila. You're guilty of mi'ila. So that's very interesting. Let's hold on to that. B'mei Meriva Kadesh, in the whole episode that happened in Mei Meriva. So by the way, Merivat Kadesh. So anybody's going to say, no, Moshe really died because of the Meraglim. So God disagrees. So I don't know about you, but if there's a machloket between you and God, so halacha ke God. Right? So that's the place. That's the place that it happened. Why? Asher, al asher ma'altem bi. So this we have to throw into the discussion as well. We can't ignore this word ma'altem bi, but again it goes back, b'mei mirivat kadesh medbar tzin, al asher lo kidashtem oti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. You were guilty of somehow not performing some act of kedusha. Ki meneged tirat ha'aretz v'shema lo tavo al ha'aretz asher ninoten l'bnei Yisrael. You're not going in. So, this, as I said, is also significant, so let's try to work some of this out, and let's see where we can go. The one last thing I want to say about Aaron before we continue. What was Aaron's job? Don't tell me his eventual job. What was his first job that he gets? And when does he get the job? He's supposed to speak for Moshe. So why is Aaron punished?
He didn't speak.
Because he didn't speak. Right? He didn't do his job. So the difficulty I have with Aaron, I can solve, you know, very elegantly by saying, what did Aaron do? So you say Aaron didn't do anything. So what would I then say? Nachon, bidiyuk, zebaya. Who did speak? Moshe speaks. What does Moshe say? Lo ish devarim ani, right? I'm not a man of words, and it's difficult for me to speak. I can speak at this and that, right? Moshe has a hard time speaking. So who's supposed to speak for him? Aaron's supposed to speak for him. So what happens over here? Aaron doesn't speak, and Moshe speaks, and we get into trouble. So I can go back and say, okay, what was Moshe's sin? So Moshe's sin was for speaking. What was, although it's interesting, because what does God say? Speak to the rock. And what does he do? He speaks to Am Yisrael. Again, I want to pay attention over here. That's what I'm saying. There's a couple of different things. Moshe takes the staff and he hits it. So part of our problem is we were brought up with saying, what did Moshe do wrong? He hit the rock and that was the sin. Or he hit the rock twice and that's the sin. What's my problem then? What did Aaron do wrong? He didn't hit the rock. So why should he be punished? What did Aaron do? Well, Aaron didn't do anything. Well, he was supposed to do something. What was Aaron's job? His job was to speak. So if Aaron doesn't speak, so maybe that's the problem. But maybe the problem is not just that he doesn't speak. Maybe the problem is that Moshe speaks and what Moshe says. Okay? So, what's the one word that keeps coming back? And by the way, you asked, what's the name of the place? Which is also interesting. What's the name of the place that all this happened? What's the name of the place? Kadesh. So the name of the place is Kadesh. Look back in source number 1. So now I have to ask myself a question. Why is this place called Kadesh? Was it called Kadesh when they got there, or is it only called Kadesh afterwards? When I read the very end of that section, what does it say? Vayikadesh bam. What does it mean, Vayikadesh bam? Lo imantim bilakti sheni. Over here also, as I said, at the end of Devarim, it's also the word, b'mei mirvat Kadesh. asher lo kidashtem oti. So this idea of kedusha also keeps coming up again and again, so that's also something we need to pay attention to. Take a look now, and I'm going to tell you what we're looking at. What I had said from the very beginning was that this whole episode is one of deja vu. Correct? We've heard this before, we hear it again, we get the sense we've lived through this entire thing again. So let's take a look, and now we're not going to see all of them, but let's take a look at the various times that the people complain, and at the end we're going to go back to the complaint this week and take a look if it really is in fact the same. So when do we first start hearing them complain? As soon as they leave. Source number two. By the way, we could have gone back in Egypt also. We have some complaints there as well, but let's start over here once they leave. Ufaru hikriv, this is Shemot Perek Yudalid. Ufaru hikriv v'yisu b'nei Yisrael etenehem v'nei Mitzrayim nosei achareim v'yiruma od v'yitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. They're scared, we understand why they're scared, and they cry out to God. What do they cry out to God? It's not clear. Maybe they pray, maybe it's something very good, maybe something very holy. But they say to Moshe, Vayomru el Moshe, Hamibli en kvarim b'mitzrayim. By the way, do you get the sense that we've heard that many times? Are there no graves in Egypt? Lakachnu lamut b'midbar? Is there a problem with a lack of graves in Egypt that this is why you took us out? Mazota sita lanu lotzianu mitzrayim. What did you do to take us out? Halozeh devar shedibarnu lech mitzrayim lemar chadal menu banot mitzrayim ki tov lanu lavodetz mitzrayim imutenu b'midbar. So this is what we said when we're still in Egypt. It's better to serve in Egypt than to die in the desert. By the way, eventually they die in the desert. So eventually they do die in the desert. Now, let's pause here for a second. What is their complaint? Their complaint is, we never should have left. We would have been better up in Egypt. Did you just take us out to die? Are there no graves in Egypt? Okay, so that's... So we're out of Egypt, not far out, but what is their complaint focused on? We want to be back in Egypt. Okay? Right? We want to be back in Egypt. So I'm saying, this is right when they leave. Next one, Vavayavo Marata, source 3, Valoyukhlishtop Mayimi Maraki Maria, Mamakim Kurashima Mara, Vailinu Amamoshele Mor Manishte. It's interesting, by the next time when they get to Mara, there is no other complaint as we have nothing to drink. Okay, that's all they complain. We need to drink. Next, Vayisuma Ilim Vayavo called up in Israel Midbar Sin. Ben Elim ben Sinai, b'chamish asar l'chodesh ha'shinit zamir tzitzrayim, v'elinu kol ha'adat b'nei Yisrael al Moshe v'al Aron b'midbar. They complain to Moshe Nair, v'yomur leim b'nei Yisrael, mi yitain mutenu b'yad Hashem b'eretz Mitzrayim. Had we only died in Egypt, meaning had we never left. So what's the focus on again? The focus is on Egypt. What does it say about Egypt? We're going to hear a complaint like this later on. Bishiftenu al sir habasar ba'ochleinu lechem la sova ki yotzeitim etanu minbar hazeh lamit et kol hakahal hazeh barav. We had great food in Egypt. I guess they had great sandwiches because they talk about bread and they talk about a meat. So I guess they had great sandwiches. I guess they had hamburgers in Egypt. And then Bayomar Hashem Moshe ninimam tiyo lechem lechem min hashamayim. Okay, I'll give you bread from heaven. So that's where the mun begins. So again, what's the focus on? The focus is Egypt. So far, two out of two, no graves in Egypt, and the food was better in Egypt. So those are the first two complaints. Source number five is the one that we already looked at. So now let's look at it again just to see what the complaint is here. Right? Why do you take us out of Egypt in order to kill us? So again, it seems to be complaints about having left Egypt. Source number six. This is already in Sefer Bamidbar. Vasafsufa shebrikirbo hitavu tava vishu vivku gambinis rovimu mi achenu basar. Who's going to give us meat? Zacharnu et adagash en ochal b'mitzrayim chinam et hakishuim v'et avtichim et hachatzir v'et abatzim v'et hashumim. So again, they think about food, and what are they nostalgic about? What is it they want? They want Mitzrayim. So again, the focus is on Mitzrayim. V'tanav sheni v'sheret kol bilti et haman einenu. So last time they complained about meat and bread, God gave them man. Now they got man, they complained about the man. Yudalid. This is already by the in the midst of the Meraglim. Batisa kol David nu et kolam v'yivku ha'am b'layla hu v'yilinu ha'moshe ba'al aron kol b'nei Yisro v'yimor layim kol eda lumatnu be'eretz Mitzrayim. Had we only died in Egypt. By the way, we get the sense that we haven't progressed very much. Had we only died in Egypt. Oba midbar hazeh, even died in the desert. Umatu v'lama Hashem mevi otanu l'aretz hazot l'npol b'cherv nashenu v'teinu yu l'vaz halo tov lanu shuv Mitzrayim. And here you hear it quite clearly. Nostalgic for Mitzrayim, if only we can go back to Egypt. Let's go back. And maybe saving the best for source number 8. He calls them and said, we're not coming. Now Egypt gets thrown into a whole new level. Had you, you know, it's not enough that you took us out of a land that flows with milk and honey. Which land are they talking about?
Egypt.
Mitzrayim. Lamitenu bamidbar. You took us out of a land which flows with milk and honey to kill us in the desert. Aflo el eretz zavat chalav udvash evid anu. You didn't take us to a place like that. No, we're not coming up, and so on. Which means the complaints that we've had till now have all been in one direction. What is the direction? The complaints has always been, why do you take us out of Egypt? Are there no graves in Egypt? Why do you take us out to be killed? This was a terrible thing that you did. Finally, Datan Aviram, you took us out of a land which flows with milk and honey in order to kill us over here in the desert. So I'm saying the complaints become again and again and again. What is the focus of the complaints? They always complain that they would have been better to stay in Egypt. Now, we all understand that. Why do we understand that? Because, and this is very important now, because they were slaves. You know, people that were brought up in the Soviet Union during communism, was communism good or bad? How's that for a question? Well, it went bankrupt eventually, but was it good or bad? So communism, it actually ended up becoming an unviable system, but why that was, we won't go into a whole economic or social analysis. I can tell you something interesting, that I was in the Soviet Union around 30 years ago I was there. And I was in Kenya a couple of years later, in Nairobi. Nairobi is a third world country in the middle of Africa. The food available in Nairobi was far more plentiful than the food available in the Soviet Union. The standard of living was higher. What happened in the Soviet Union is everybody had basic needs. Everybody had a place to live. There was no homeless. Everybody had they had heat in Russia for free. Right? That was standard. All basic needs were met, but there was no reward for excellence. So, which was exactly what the problem was. Because if there's no reward for excellence, then why attempt excellence? But basic needs were met. And people that, you know, it was also interesting that when the United States would get involved in these ideological debates with the Soviet Union, they would say that America is an immoral place. You don't preach to us. Again, in America, what's the most basic right? The most basic right is right of free movement, that you can go from place to place. In the Soviet Union, there was no rights of free movement. You could not leave. You could not go from one place to the other. So they went back and they said, don't lecture us. In America, you have homeless people. Why does homeless? Because if economically you can't afford to live someplace, then you have no place to live. And there are people who are, which means your underclass are living on the streets, your underclass have to turn to crime, your underclass have no heat, have no, and so on. We take care of everybody because we're more moral than you. So again, it became a question of morality. But when people left the Soviet Union, they had a very hard time because they sort of expected all their basic needs to be met. That's, you know, good socialism. What happens when now you have to go make it on your own? And you don't have a place to live unless you can pay for the place to live. And you don't get basic heat or other basic utilities and so on. So suddenly you turn and say, you know, what's going on here? So I think it's very similar to the mentality of the individuals who left Egypt, who are now complaining. In Egypt, we used to eat for free. Used to eat for free, you idiot. You were a slave, and they fed you to keep you alive, to keep you as a slave. But that's not their perception. Their perception is, we never have to pay for food. What I'm saying, that is just such a fascinating insight here. We never paid for, we ate for free. Everything was free over there. Yes, it was free because you had no freedom. You were slaves. You had no freedom, and now you have freedom, and the whole world has changed. But the problem is the people who were brought up with all their basic things taken care of, there is something in the human mind which gets attracted to not having to work, not having to struggle, not having to do everything, even though the reality is that you're working far harder, but you have everything taken care of. Basically, you're not taking responsibility for yourself, and you have all the basic needs being met. And we find the generation that left Egypt, every now and again, especially when pressure comes in, they miss that. And that's when they keep coming back and saying, oh, we only left Egypt, we only left Egypt. Apparently God felt that this generation, and by the way, don't bother me now about the spies or, for that matter, the sin of the golden calf. And again, I'm going to remind you, according to Rashi, the 40 years in the desert is a result of the sin of the sin of the golden calf. Rashi says this. Why? Because it says that they got Yom L'Shana, Yom L'Shana. And it says that they went and they toured for 40 years. So for 40 days. Why did they go for 40 days? Rashi there says, in order to match to what their punishment's going to be. But Rashi notes, they were already 1 year in the desert. Why are they already 1 year? And again, I want you to think about that. They were supposed to leave Egypt, stop by Sinai, go straight to Eretz Israel. No other stops. Again, I'm going to just go over things we covered earlier in the year. There was no need to build a Mishkan. Why was no need to build a Mishkan? Because they're not going to stay in the desert. You only need a Mishkan if you can stay in the desert. You go straight to Eretz Yisrael, you don't need a Mishkan. Why? You just build the Beit HaMikdash. But what happened? What was supposed to take 11 days total just starts taking more and more and more and more time. And eventually, because it takes more and more time, it ends up getting to 40 years. Eventually it gets to 40 years, Moshe's not going to make it as well. Ah, Biglal Chem, because of you. Which thing because of you? Because of the golden calf? Because of the golden calf, they got a suspended sentence for 40 years. When did they get the real sentence? They got the real sentence after the sin of the Meraglim. But eventually, so much time has gone on, so sooner or later, Moshe is going to do something which displeases God, and Moshe is going to say, it happened because of you. And I can, again, it sounds petty still, but I can understand where Moshe is coming from when he makes such a statement. But again, I want to go a little bit deeper over here. It's possible, and we already hear it in Parashat Bishalach. What did it say in Bishalach? That God is not going to take them derech eretz plishtim. Why? Ki karovhu. It's too close. What does it mean it's too close? They're not ready to go. They're not ready to get there yet. And this is something which is so disturbing, and this connects with the mystical concept which is taught in the Zohar, that they hit the 49th level of Tum'ah, and if they would have stayed any longer, they would have disappeared. By the way, that they hit the 49th level, I did find in the Zohar. They would have stayed one more second, I didn't find in the Zohar. If they stay one more second, they're going to disappear. So what does God have to do? He has to take them out. But what does that mean? He takes them out too soon. What does it mean he takes them out too soon? And all of you knew they left too soon. How do you know left too soon? It's just to be there for 400 years. He took the Chishivat HaKetz. He takes them out after 210 years. What's the implication of leaving too soon? They're not ready to go to Eretz Yisrael. How do I know they're not ready to go to Eretz Yisrael? Because we see it time and time again in the desert. They're not ready to go to Eretz Yisrael. What's the first indication? God says, I'm not taking them derech Eretz Plishtim, ki karovhu. I'm not taking them this way. It's too close. What does it mean it's too close? They're not ready to go in. How unready do they go in? They're never ready to go in. Why are they never ready to go in? Because they're still former slaves. We need a new generation. The new generation is going to have to come up. And that's one thing I want to stress. This is a new generation. If I'm going to now attempt my first serious attempt to what did Moshe do wrong here, that Moshe treated the new generation just like they were the old generation. That's my first attempt. Moshe treats the new generation like they're the old generation. What happened in the old generation? We got the complaints come again and again and again. What does Moshe do in the old generation? He picks up the stick, God said, takes it, hits the rock, water comes out of the rock, and Moshe does the exact same thing. By the way, that may be the problem. It could be the problem is that he does the exact same thing. It could be that what he was supposed to do is something completely different, and that's, let's hold on to that for a second. I saw a wonderful interpretation by the Meshech Chachma. I wrote about this in my first book. The Meshech Chachma, nobody quotes because he doesn't say it here. He gives a wonderful interpretation, but he doesn't say it right here. But I'm actually going to connect it with a couple of other things the Meshech Chachma says, and I think it will make a little bit more sense. When Moshe comes down from the mountain, and he sees that they're worshiping the Egel, he takes the Luchot and he breaks it. Why? Which means, what I'm asking is, what's the correlation? And one thing that you can tell me is they got upset. But by the way, if Moshe gets upset and he breaks the Luchot, then the breaking of the Luchot may be very close to getting upset over here. So why, by breaking the Luchot, does God say, in the Gemara at least, Asher Shibarta, Yashar Koach Sheshibarta, Kol HaKavod, way to go, that was the right thing to do, it's a good thing that you broke it. And why over here, when Moshe gets upset and he hits the rock, is it the same thing? You break the Luchot, it's a good thing. You hit the rock, it's a bad thing. So please explain to me what the difference is. Now let's go back. Why, when he sees the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav, why then does Moshe feel that the right thing to do is to break the Luchot? So listen to what the Meshech Chachma says. That when Moshe comes down and he sees them worshiping something they made out of their own hands, he says, if the Jews can worship something that they made, they will end up worshiping something which came down from heaven. They'll end up worshiping the Luchot. They'll turn the Luchot into Avodah Zarah. If they can turn this into Avodah Zarah, they will certainly turn this into Avodah Zarah. What's the difference between the first Luchot and the second Luchot? The first Luchot were written by God. They were as holy as it can possibly be. The second Luchot are made by Moshe. So what is it that Moshe understands at that point? Again, this is the Meshech Chachma. What is it that Moshe understands at this point? That the people are too far from this. They can't have something which is so holy because they're going to turn that into Avodah Zarah. Now let's pause there for a second. And what went wrong over here? What is it that God said in the instructions to bring the water out of the rock? He actually said something, so let's pay attention to what God said back in the first source, Pasuk Chet. But the Berashem Moshe Lemor, Pasuk Zayin, Chet. Kach et hamateh, first thing, take the mateh. Vakel et ha'edah, second thing, gather them, atav Aaron. By the way, notice Aaron is there within the gathering. Aaron Achicha. Vidibartem el hasela. By the way, who's supposed to speak?
Both.
So I'm going to ask again, why does Aaron get punished? He didn't speak. So I'm just saying, if you read now carefully, you realize, yesh mashu bazeh. There is something to Aaron's silence, which is the problem. V'dibartim ala sela le'enehem, to their eyes. By the way, is there any other episode that they see, dibar le'enehem, that they see sound? Is there any other episode that they... Re'ima takolot. So it's very interesting. V'dibartim le'enehem. There's also that they can see sound, which means that maybe there was something supposed to happen here, which is similar to Har Sinai. And again, I want to remind you, this is not the same generation. This is a new generation. V'natan meimav. And it will give its water.
Wait, all this generation, was it between Mahan and Sinai?
If they were, they were very young. This is the new generation. Right, this is under 20. This is the new generation. V'dibartim el ha'sela, which means this new generation is this generation that has not experienced, shall we say, Har Sinai as adults or at all. And Moshe, and God says to them, Daber le'enehim. So again, to me, that's very, not just Daber, v'dibartim. Right? Both of them are supposed to speak. Again, kach et hamateh v'akel et ha'edah atav Aaron achicha v'dibartim el hasela le'enehim v'natan meimav v'otzeite lehem. They were supposed to take the staff but speak. And the people were supposed to see something. And maybe what they saw was supposed to be somehow like Har Sinai. What did they do instead? By the way, if they speak, what should they have said? What should they have said if they speak? I'm going to read it again. Who are they supposed to speak to? The Sela. The Sela. The two were supposed to speak to the Sela. What should they have said? It doesn't say. So what should they have said? Or they should have said, God wishlichim. So they should have said, God demands that you give water to his people. Do you agree with me that I know I'm making this up, so I apologize. Is that what they should have said? Or do you have a better thing to say? God said, right, God, we're in the middle. God, right, pointing up to heaven, God said that you should give water to the people. And then what should have happened? The water should have happened. Now, what would have been important about saying that? They would have brought God into the conversation. What would that have created? A Kiddush Hashem. What would that have created? Wow. Even the rock listens to God. We better listen to God. This would have been a Mamad Har Sinai. Of course, there was different rocks. There God wrote on the rocks, and now God is speaking, tells Moshe, speak to the rock. But God is supposed to be part of the conversation. God says to Moshe, Moshe and Aaron, say to the rock, give water to the people. So again, I'm adding that in. God said, give water to the people. Good. What did they do instead? Now pay attention to what Moshe says instead. V'yikach Moshe et hamateh lefnei Hashem, v'yikulu Moshe v'Aaron et hakal el pnei ha'sela, v'yomer lahem shimu na hamorim. The first thing is that he says, you are rebellious. So what is Moshe saying now? You are just like every other episode till this point. You're rebellious just like all the other times. Amin ha'sela hazen notzi lechem mayim? Now, what is the impression? Amin ha'sela hazen notzi. Who's going to take it out? The impression they give them is anachnu otzinu etzeh. And the miracle takes place. They take it, they hit it, goes out. What does God accuse them of? Which word was used? Later on. In Dvarim, what word did he use? Mi'ilah. What's mi'ilah? Misusing something which is kadosh. How is there a misuse of something which is kadosh over here? They made it sound like they did it instead of making it sound that God is going to do it. That's the mi'ilah. Now, we're... Well, I'm trying to find some reason for them to die, so I have to find something, right?
So it's like
you split into two, one option. I've been giving options all along. So, but now, as I said, I want to try to figure out what's going on over here. So, what have we just now seen? That God accuses them of mi'ilah. What is mi'ilah? Mi'ilah is a misappropriation of something which is holy. So what was misappropriated? The miracle was misappropriated. Who was the miracle supposed to be ascribed to? Supposed to be ascribed to God. God did it. What impression did they give? The impression they gave is as if they do it. Now, again, I want to stress that from the very beginning when Moshe does these things, you know, we all understood all along that it was God that was doing it. Yes? All along we knew that Moshe has, it's Matei Elokim, right? And Aaron, they're using the staff of God. And all along the way, from the Aseret Makot and going on to the splitting of the sea, and constantly it's God who's involved in this and God who's doing this. But now, here's the important point. It's not the same generation. It's not the same generation who has seen all of these things. It's a new generation. And again, I'm going to stress, and if they did see it, they saw it through a child's perspective, which is a completely different perspective. Now, as they see things as an adult, and as they're paying attention as an adult, Moshe gives them the impression that it's him doing this and not God. That's the impression which is given, which means when we use the word mi'ilah, and again, God is the one who used the word mi'ilah when he goes back and gives this. Let's take a look at that Pasuk one more time. In source 11, why are you going to die? Right? Pasuk, source 11, Pasuk Nun. Umut bahar asher ata ole shama v'yasaf elamecha kasher mit aron achicha bahar ahar v'yasaf elamav al asher ma'altem bi betoch b'nei Yisrael b'mei merivat kadesh midbar tzin al asher lo kidashtem oti betoch b'nei Yisrael. You did not sanctify me. You did not cause a kiddush Hashem. So now again I'll say, so how could they have made this into a Kiddush Hashem? Say, God said, give water to Am Yisrael. Instead they said, can we take out the water? Again, it is Hamin Hasela Hazen Notzi Lachem Mayim. And if you would have tapped Moshe and said, how are you doing this? He would have said, I'm doing this from God, which means the problem over here in terms of this Mi'ilah.
This education.
It's education, but it's me'ilah in terms of the perception. It's what people see. People are going to watch this, and it's going to look as if it's Moshe who took out the water. That's the me'ilah. Which, again, I'm going to say it again. Why should I say it? Al Hashem ma'altem bi betoch b'nei Yisrael b'mei mirat kadesh medbar tzin al Hashem lo kidashtem oti. You did not perform the Kiddush Hashem. You did not say, God will give you this water. You made it look like you did it. So now what's the problem with making it look like they did it? What's the problem making it look like Moshe did it? They can now be convinced that Moshe is, wow, so powerful. Which means, correct, which means just like Moshe understood that by worshipping the Egel, they'll one day end up worshipping the gold, they'll end up worshipping the Luchot. The Meshach Chachma, as I said, he says these points independently. He says that by Moshe making the water come out, it looks like he did it. These are not the same generation that remember Moshe as a little kid. This is not the same generation that knew Moshe's parents. This is a new generation's who Moshe. Moshe's a god. Moshe's this. Which means Moshe's problem of doing this is the result. The result is that Moshe now looks like he has too much power. Moshe now looks like he did it himself. So I'm saying that as one whole idea from the Meshach Chachma, but I'm saying now an independent idea. When I look at the words here, that he's guilty of Mi'ilah, so what's the Mi'ilah that he did? He made it look like he did it, instead of creating the Kiddush Hashem that God asked for. Now I want to go one step further and note something that maybe we didn't note the first time we read this. And I try to read it as powerfully as possible, and I left you with the possibility of noticing this or not noticing this. Take a look at the people's complaint, and I want you to tell me if this really is the same complaint that we've heard every single time before. What was the complaints before? We wish we never left Egypt. There wasn't enough graves in Egypt. We should have died in Egypt, right? What were the complaints all the way around? We have no food. There was food in Egypt, right? There's nothing to eat, no meat, no none. Let's read the words and see if their complaint really is the same complaint. Back in Source 1, Perikuf. Pasuk Gimel. Vayerev ha'am im Moshe v'yomu lamu lovim lemer. Had we only died like our brothers did Lefnei Hashem. By the way, that's fascinating. They're saying, who died Lefnei Hashem? The 250 people died Lefnei Hashem. The others, the plague, was Lefnei Hashem. If we're already going to die, we want to die Lefnei Hashem. By the way, you know what else is here different from every other complaint that we've seen till now? God is mentioned. They just now mentioned God. God was never mentioned any other time, as far as I recall, in any complaint. They always blame Moshe. Why did you do this? And now they're saying, if we only would have died Lefnei Hashem. Do you realize how different this is from saying, had we only, are there no graves in Egypt? I know that when we heard this the first time, we just heard it's the exact same thing. Continue. V'loma ha'veitem et kal Hashem. Hold it. This wasn't a fluke. In the last pasuk they talked about God. They now mentioned God twice in a row. Do you realize now what's so ironic? They mention God twice, and Moshe doesn't mention God even once. They're talking about God, and Moshe's not talking about God. Why do you take us out to die here? Now, this sounds so much like the other complaints, but what did all the other complaints then always say? Are there no graves in Egypt? And they were all looking backwards. Continue. Why do you take us to die here now? Tell me, in what I'm about to read, are they talking about Egypt or someplace else? Lo makom zera uteina vegefen v'rimon umayim ein l'shtot. What are they? No, they're talking about the desert. But what are they referring to? They're talking about Eretz Yisrael.
But they're talking about where they are.
I know, and what and where we are is not.
They're comparing it to
Eretz Yisrael. Exactly. Do you all notice that? Lo makom zera uteina vegefen v'rimon umayim ein lanu. They're no longer doing what the previous generation did by saying, "Oh, we wish we were in Egypt. Back in Egypt, there was kishuim and there was avatiach and there was shum and there was sirah basar and we had graves there and whatever else you wanted." They're no longer talking about Mitzrayim. They're saying, "Why are we here and not in Eretz Yisrael?" One second. I never noticed this before this week either. So in case you're saying, what they say, Kahal Hashem, They say Lifnei Hashem, we'll go in order. They say Lifnei Hashem, they say Kahal Hashem, and they complain bitterly. What is their complaint? We wish we were in Eretz Yisrael already. They're a Jew sitting in Galut. Let me ask you a question. A Jew who sits in Galut, is it permissible for them to complain that we're sitting in Galut and we wish we were in Eretz Yisrael? Or is that a very bad thing to do? Yes, they're allowed to complain that we're not in Eretz Yisrael? Yes. In fact, by the way, the opposite is true. That if they feel, wow, this is great over here, but it's terrible in Eretz Yisrael, that's the problem. Here you have this new generation who are saying, we wish we were in Eretz Yisrael already. We wish we were there already. Why are we still here in this place? Okay, we have no water. But what are they really complaining about? They're really complaining that we're still here. No, what are they saying? Yalla. Yalla. What are they saying? They're saying, let's yalla. Let's go.
When they say that's the desert.
The desert. And but their point of reference is, Lo makom zeret te'ina v'gefen v'rimon. Excuse me. Egypt was never described in those terms. These are terms which are only used to describe Eretz Yisrael. When they came back, what were they carrying? When the Meraglim came back, what were they carrying? V'yasu b'mot b'shnayim u'min harimonim u'min ateinim. Sorry. Esh anavim rimonim u'te'inim. What do they carry back with them? What are they talking about over here? They're talking about Eretz Yisrael. They're talking about Eretz Yisrael. They're saying we wish we were in Eretz Yisrael already. They're not talking about Egypt. What? Finally, I get it. Oh, that's cool. You hear that? Took all year. Only one semester. Finally. Think about it. Either they do or they don't. But my point is, they heard all kinds of things from their parents. That's what happens. Moshe thinks they're talking just like their parents. So what does Moshe do? He acts just like he acted with his parents. Oh, with them? Hit the rock. Now he's... But they're not talking like their parents. And what else does Moshe call them? Hamorim, you rebellious people. Why are they rebellious? We don't want to be in Chutz La'aretz. We want to be in Eretz Yisrael. Why are they rebellious? And what does Hashem? What does God then say to Moshe and Aaron? You did not create a Kiddush Hashem. You can't continue. Zo, maspik. You can't continue with this generation. You don't understand this generation. By the way, I feel very uncomfortable saying this. I do feel uncomfortable saying this. Moshe doesn't understand this generation. He doesn't understand what they're saying to him. Okay. I'm just pointing out that it seems to be that Moshe is hearing all the other complaints together. And again, this would be the easiest thing to say, oh, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. How many times can they complain again and again? You rebellious people. They're not complaining the same way. Again, first of all, Lefnei Hashem, had we only died in front of God, that's a completely different kind of death. That's Nadav Avihu. That's a death of being in proximity of God, close to God, with God. They're not saying we wish we were back in Egypt. Kal Hashem, the people of God. Okay, Am Yisrael, what comes next? Torah Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. That's what they're saying, but Moshe doesn't hear it. And instead of creating this Kiddush Hashem, Moshe gives the impression that it's him who is doing this miracle, and God says, you know, lo, zel, must speak. It's a new generation, we need something new. Moshe is shayach to the previous generation, so what's going to have to happen? So Moshe's going to have to be buried with the previous generation. Moshe stays with the people that he took out of Egypt. He stays with them. Aaron stays with them. Miriam stays with them. Which means in retrospect, I said, aren't you bothered by Miriam's death? No, this is the death of this whole generation. The whole generation dies. 600,000 people died, and Miriam and Aaron and Moshe. They all die. Why do they die? They all die because it's time for this generation to pass on and for the new generation to move on. Unfortunately, it's time for the new generation to move on. Why can't Moshe be a part of it? Because Moshe's not a part of it. What I just now did is I took it away from Simon Says. He hit the rock. He didn't hit the rock. He was supposed to hit the rock twice. No. And what I'm saying, I think, is much closer to what it actually says in the Psukim, because all the commentaries that I looked at seem to ignore what the people say, and they only look at Moshe's response. You know why? Because they're all guilty of the same thing that Moshe was guilty of, assuming that what they said was exactly the same thing that was said in every single time till now. But it's not the same thing. They're not saying the same thing. They're not saying we wish we were back in Egypt. What they're saying is we wish we were in Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe, unfortunately, just hears the same thing again. I understand why he hears that. You keep hearing the same thing. You think it, but you have to listen. You have to listen to a new generation. Somebody who tries to teach and just every day or every year gets up and says the exact same thing today because they said it last time, so I don't know how successful they're going to end up being as a teacher. So it says, Hashem Ma'altem. The impression that was given was that you two did this. You were supposed to say something else. I'm going to say it again, what I think they were supposed to say. to the rock, God said, give the water. And that they didn't do. Which means instead of giving all the credit to God, they gave the impression as if they did it. And the Me'ilah over here is based upon it. And I said, the most interesting interpretation of all the commentaries over here, with all due respect to Rashi and the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban and the Or HaChaim with his long list and the Rambam, the most interesting interpretation is God's in Sefer Devarim, where he uses the word Me'ilah to say what it is that they did wrong. That to me is the key to opening up the entire thing. The other key over here, of course, is listening to what the people actually say, because once you see what they say, then you realize that the sin was, in fact, very, very different. That all the Jews in Chutz La'aretz should feel the same way that they did, that halavai, we were in Eretz Israel already, instead of feeling comfortable outside.